You wanna give love to the city, that's a fact. But you're gonna need help if you wanna make an impact.
Well endowed,
you want to be
well endowed
with the Edmonton community.
Things really happen when you find that you're well endowed.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Well Endowed Podcast, brought to you by Edmonton Community Foundation and a proud affiliate member of the Alberta Podcast Network. We bring you community discourse about the amazing organizations and people who come together to make Edmonton strong. I'm Elizabeth Bonkink.
And I'm Andrew Paul. And just in case you hear her in the background, we're also joined by a very special guest, Dorothy Parker Posey, who is an adorable little black lab that I have had to bring to the office today. But let's jump into the show. This month, Sanjay Shahani tells us about how the Edmonton Arts Council is looking 10 years ahead to shape Edmonton's arts and heritage communities. And we check in on the Lowry Award for Women of Excellence to see how it continues to help empower women. But first, we hear from Fringe Theatre Adventures and Opera Nuova about a special matching program that is helping them invest in Edmonton artists.
That's right, Andrew. The Canadian Cultural Investment Fund matches donations to help build sustainable funding for arts organizations. But that funding is more than just money in the bank. Lisa and I were curious to find out just what kind of impact CCIF has, so we reached out to recipients to find out more. Let's take a listen.
The Canadian Cultural Investment Fund is packing a big punch when it comes to funding for Edmonton's arts. That big punch means real performance and development opportunities for artists and exciting productions for Edmonton audiences. How does it work? Donor advisor extraordinaire, Noel Xavier.
Hello, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me back.
Stop by to tell us what CCIF is.
Well, firstly, it's one of my favorite programs here at Edmonton Community Foundation because it's a great opportunity for the performing arts organizations in our city. So the CCIF program is something that's put out by Canadian Heritage, so it's a federal program, and it encourages private donors to contribute endowment funds to their favorite performing arts organizations, and then those dollars are matched each year. And the match goes into an endowment that is designated back to those performing arts organizations. So it's a great win-win for people who are trying to build sustainable funding, both on the charity side as well as on the donor side.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to donate to performing arts, I would say give $100 to one of their endowment funds.
So hypothetically, your $100 donation would be made to the performing arts organization, or directly here to ECF for them. And then together, ECF and the arts organization submits an application for matching funds. So we're now up to 17 participating organizations here in the city.
And what does that look like in dollars?
In dollars, it's actually really quite substantial, actually. I'm glad you asked. We have actually, together with the arts partners, have raised over $8 million in matching funds alone. So that does not include the original contributions made by donors. The $8 million is what Canadian Heritage has contributed to the program over the years.
What does that mean on the granting side?
The endowment funds that have been established from the matching grants from the CCIF program have granted back to our arts partners over $2.7 million. But remember, Lisa, this is just from the CCIF matching grants. This doesn't include the percentage of dollars that would go back from those donor-contributed dollars in the beginning. So really, we're looking at probably $5 or $6 million that have gone out since 2002 to the arts community in our city. And for some of those arts organizations, this matching grant is probably the single largest contribution that they get on an annual basis. So it's really quite impactful.
To find out just what kind of impact Noel was talking about, we reached out to just two of ECF's 17 partners to see what they've been able to do with their CCIF grants. The Fringe and Opera Nuova are using their CCIF funds to provide mentorship, resources, training, and performance opportunities for artists. Here are Adam Mitchell.
Hi, I'm Adam Mitchell. I'm the executive director of Fringe Theatre.
And Bobby O'Connor.
And I'm Bobby O'Connor. I'm the director of development and communications for Fringe Theatre. Just recently, we endowed over $235,000, and we applied for a matching gift through CCIF so that we could start funding new works of art in our community. So we actually launched a brand new award that honors the doctors Robert and Marilyn Westbury and their legacy of giving and caring about French theater and emerging artists specifically in our community. This new award is going to give one local artist every year $25,000 to help support a new play, production of a new play. So we're really excited about what this means for our community.
Part of the award package itself is the support of Fringe Theater, access to one of our spaces, all of the resources that go into producing inside our space, whether it's the Westbury Theater itself or one of our other venues. And of course, it includes a $5,000 cash award as well.
So how does the Westbury Family Fringe Theater Fund Award come to life?
We just launched our season live on the internet. We have four incredible pieces that have been selected for this year's season. And there are a very diverse group of folks that are coming together, including the recipients of the Westbury Family Fringe Theater Fund. Two local artists, one of whom is an established actor, performer, and writer. The other who was the founder of a taiko drumming group here in town. It's their personal story. He experienced a bicycle accident. He was hit by a vehicle a number of years ago, and it's his journey coming back with a brain injury to reclaim sort of life, adapt, and become and continue to be a triathlete, and all through the lens of someone who held on to a passion for taiko drumming as well. So we're really excited about that.
The show is called A Man Draws a Bird, and it's going to come up this next May, 2019.
And the award has done more than help fund a new production. It inspired another way to think about how funding could help artists.
So one really exciting thing as someone who deals with philanthropy all day is when you see giving that inspires other giving. And a really cool story that touched me personally that came out of this whole process for us was we managed to surprise the Westbury family with this award. And so at a dinner during the Fringe Festival, we took him by surprise and said, guess what? And we did this big reveal. It was quite touching. But in that dinner that night was John Cloutier, who is a man in town who runs the Nordic mechanical business. He's been around for quite a long time in Edmonton as a philanthropist. And he was so inspired by hearing exactly how this award was going to impact the community that he approached after dinner and said, I want to do another award that deals with the front end of what an artist experiences. So that's great that once they have an idea and they're ready to create a show, that this award will help do that. But what about the professional development end of things? Like, how can we help an artist there? We brought back up CCIF, and we said, well, you know, we can apply with whatever you give to match it. And that actually got us over that threshold that we would need to actually create an award. And so now there's a second award that we created just this year that is the Nordic and Cloutier Family Innovation Award. And so it gives $2,500 to an artist each year towards professional development and process creation kind of stuff. But again, it was a large part because we could sit down and say these funds will be matched and we can do a lot more in the community through your gift. And it just kind of keeps building in lots of ways. I feel like numbers are always impactful. So when we invested $235,000, CCIF this last year was able to get us to $390,000.
Bobby told us about what funding new artists means for Edmonton talent.
Oh, well, the really exciting thing is it keeps talent here. And then more importantly, not only does it keep it here and it helps kind of foster new ideas, creativity, innovation, but then once someone has that first production, they can get it off the ground, they can see how an audience is responding, they can tweak it. That's often when they can actually start to take it elsewhere. And so it's exciting because while artists might be born here and they might make this their home, so this is their creative base, many artists are also traveling, and so as they go and they take these works across Canada, across North America, and into the world, they're carrying with them the Edmonton name and supported by Fringe Theatre, supported by CCIF, and so on and so forth, which is really exciting for everyone.
The Fringe has created two new funds that help nurture and develop Edmonton talent. Understanding how important it is to invest in the artists in our community will continue to help foster artistic careers, which lead to excellent productions for audiences to enjoy, and a strong reputation for the city. Opera Nuova is another organization that puts a lot of focus on giving artists the chance to develop skills that will help launch them into the industry of opera and musical theater. Here's Kim.
So I am Kim Matai-Swanett. I am a born and raised Edmontonian, but I began Opera Nuova 20 years ago.
She spoke to us about what inspired her to create the Nuova Opera and Music Theater Festival.
I had a number of really fine senior level singers who I was kind of looking at what their options were as they headed into furthering their academic studies. I really felt like we needed something to bridge the gap between academia and the professional world. And when I looked at the offer training programs across the country throughout the various big universities, the issue was that it was still very based in academia and not necessarily offering opportunities for singers to be able to really hone their crafts in acting and movement, lyric diction, because they needed to do history and harmony and ear training and, you know, get the degree formula in place kind of thing. So that's what really spawned it. That and the very summer I was thinking about doing this, I went to Shakespeare in the Park and I was inspired by the performance I saw. And as I walked away across the field from that performance, I said to my husband, you know, I think if they can do this with Shakespeare, I could do this with opera. And that was really the beginning of it all. It's just grown and grown. So it really now is 6 weeks of concert offerings, as well as now 5 productions within those 6 weeks.
But more than the scale of production, Kim told us about how the landscape of the opera industry is changing to include musical theater and what that means for operatic artists.
We are always looking at what's happening for artists. What do artists need as they're stepping out of a master's program, for instance, and into the professional industry? And the industry is starting to really shift. I had been at a conference in Chicago, and they were talking about the fact that they would now be programming a musical into every one of their seasons. There's just an awful lot of change going on. And part of that is because we're wanting to expand our audience base. So even the Met has turned around and done some musicals. Musical theater is a growing industry, and it is something that people love and that they're interested in seeing more of it. And so for our singers in Canada to start to figure out what are the requirements to be a musical theater artist rather than an operatic artist? Where is the crossover? How do I have to adjust my training to be able to be competitive in that market? A perfect example of this was really one of our students from long ago, Megan Brown, had ended up deciding to do the auditions for Vancouver Opera's West Side Story. And a number of her colleagues from University of British Columbia, who'd all been trained in the opera program, went to those auditions as well. And what they realized was that they first had to pass a dance call before they could move into singing for anyone. And Megan, because she had done Nuova, had been trained by Marie Nitschka, who does choreography as well as movement training during the summer intensive. And Marie really has this exceptional ability to help people truly kind of find the dancer that lives within. And so Megan thought, you know what, I'm just going to take that training to heart and see if I can do this. And sure enough, she ended up getting that gig and being able to sing in this beautiful production of West Side Story. So we really feel that the training has to be about filling in some of the skill sets that simply universities can't take on at this time.
So what does 6 weeks of training for artists mean for us spectators?
From an audience perspective, the festival is about making sure that audience members can experience the talent that Canada has and really celebrate that talent. Edmonton was a great city to build this situation because it's kind of neutral territory. And because of that, you know, the teachers from across the country could come and really infuse their passion into these young artists. And then that passion is lit up on stage for audiences to take in.
How do the funds from CCIF help Nuova?
For Nuova, what has been very important in our entire growth and development is to not change who we are in order to fit a funding loop. I've always said that our organization needs to stay true to what our mandate is and who we are and why we exist. And we exist for the emerging artists. That's our premise. We want to make sure that we're helping young artists to discover what platform is best for them. How might they move forward with this career? Is this the right career for them? So that they gain clarity about that as they go. But I would say that that cultural funding, if it wasn't there at times, we'd be at a loss. You know, it's really given us some wonderful opportunities. The ability to bring the entire work to life so that it is fully produced from a set design point of view, lighting design, costume design, as well as orchestrated, means that we need funding arms because it's a very expensive art form. There's no doubt about it. Whether you're doing musical theater or opera, the reality is it is far more expensive to produce an opera or a musical theater production. This fund and the fact that this fund exists to help organizations sustain and maintain a true upper echelon level of production makes all the difference in the world.
Opera Nuova is in its 20th season, and Nuova alumni have been invited to come back to Edmonton to participate. But not everyone can make it. Why? Because they'll be performing in other productions around the world.
That was such a huge celebration for us to know that there are so many of our artists all over singing and sharing their gifts.
Opera Nuova and The Fringe see the impact that CCIF has for their artists and audiences. And they are just two of the 17 organizations ECF partners with to apply for matching funds. I asked Noel what working with CCIF has meant for him.
For me personally, I think it's a great opportunity for the arts in Edmonton to build sustainable funding. Having worked for the opera and the art gallery, the arts hold a special place in my heart. So to be able to work with these organizations every year to continue building sustainable funding is really quite important for me. I think it's important for them, and I think it's impactful for our community.
What are your biggest takeaways when you get to help match these funds, when you get to help grow these endowments?
Funding for the arts can be difficult, and so this is a crucial program. And as I said earlier, sometimes the grant from the CCIF program is that organization's single largest contribution per year. And without this program, I don't know that some of these organizations would be able to continue doing the work that they're doing.
So for anyone who's listening and curious about how to find out more about CCIF or how they can get their dollars matched, where can they go to find out more information?
Well, they could give us a call here at ECF and talk to me. I'd be happy to tell them how this can make a huge impact. They could also go to the Canadian Heritage website for more information, or they could reach out to their favorite arts organization to find out whether or not they're already participating.
Thanks so much to Kim Matthijs-Monnat from Opera Nuova, Adam Mitchell and Bobby O'Connor from Fringe Theatre Adventures, and to Noel Xavier from right here at ECF for telling us about the Canadian Cultural Investment Fund.
Both The Fringe and Opera Nuova have really exciting seasons coming up. There are some big productions and wonderful surprises. Be sure to check out their sites for tickets and performances. The Nuova Opera and Musical Theatre Festival runs from May 25th to June 30th. You can find out more at
operanuova.ca, all one word. And tickets for the festival can be bought online through our website or through our box office, which is 780-487-4844. Come and join us.
And you can find Fringe Theatre Adventures at fringetheatre.ca. Their festival comes up in August.
Yes, 16th to 26th this year.
We're really excited to kick off our theater season this year. We're offering an early bird season pass, so we've never really done this before. So help prove to us that it can work. It's $40 for a ticket to all five shows, which is exciting.
We'll be sure to have the links to their season schedules and tickets up on our site.
Edmonton boasts a diverse arts and heritage landscape, but how can we steward this landscape so that it remains engaging and relevant far into the future? Well, the Edmonton Arts Council has been working to develop a 10-year plan that seeks to welcome all sorts of creative outlets from people with many different backgrounds. I spoke with Sanjay Shahani to see what is going into their 10-year vision. Welcome to the Well Endowed Podcast, Sanjay. Can you tell us a little bit about what is behind the process of developing this new plan?
So it's a fairly extensive process. And for this plan, we wanted to ensure that right off the bat, we were building the plan based on some specific principles. So we developed the consultation process with four key principles in mind. The first one being a principle of inclusivity, and we wanted to ensure that as Edmonton changes and will change between now and 2029, we wanted to make sure that the EAC, the Edmonton Heritage Council, and Arts Habitat Edmonton, who are the other two partners in this process, had the value of inclusivity right front and center, because we are going to become a more diverse city than what we already are. We are going to be a city with the largest Indigenous population in the country, and we are also going to be one of the youngest cities in the country. With all that shift that's happening in terms of demographics, and in terms of population growth and so on, we wanted to make sure that Edmonton would be a welcoming place for everyone, not just people who are living in Edmonton, but newcomers to Edmonton, Indigenous people and artists who are coming into Edmonton, to make sure that there was space for everyone. The second key principle is a cluster of three interrelated principles. We wanted to have a focus on leadership, innovation, and we also wanted to have a focus on excellence to ensure that our arts community and heritage community was equipped and ready to take on the challenges that would come forward. And the Edmonton Arts Council and the Edmonton Heritage Council was ready to ensure that our community had the capacity to strive for excellence, to make sure that the organizations were resilient, and also to make sure that there was the right leadership artistically and administratively in place. The third principle is a principle of collective responsibility. This is a principle that actually speaks directly to why arts and heritage and culture are important to city building. We want to make sure that artists, heritage practitioners, arts organizations, festivals, and Edmontonians are all involved in ensuring that we have a vibrant, healthy, and impactful art sector. And then the fourth principle, finally, is a principle around economic security for the arts. We wanted to put this principle out because we wanted to make sure that the professionals who are doing the work, both in the arts and the heritage sector, were fairly remunerated. We wanted to make sure that we value our professionals and the sector as a whole has the ability to demonstrate its impact through its practices of ensuring that people are paid. So those were the four key principles, and the consultations were organized around those.
Yes, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the consultation process and how you're ensuring that all of these diverse voices are able to contribute to the formation of this 10-year plan.
Okay, so the consultation process is multi-layered. We obviously have in-person consultations. So we worked closely with Calder Bateman, who is the professional consultant who's been hired to actually do all the consultations as well as write, edit, and design the plan. So in ensuring that we met the threshold of all the principles that I've just talked about, we also wanted to make sure that every Edmontonian potentially had the possibility of contributing. And so we designed the consultation process in layers, as I said before. The first one being that we wanted to have one public consultation in each ward of the city. We also have had dedicated consultations for the arts and heritage communities. So we've had one for theater, one for dance, visual art, public art, literary arts, media arts, film, and then obviously the heritage ones. We also have a dedicated stream of consultations that are being done by Nehewin, which is an Indigenous company that has been hired by Calder Bateman to do a parallel stream of consultations with Indigenous communities. And they have done a fairly extensive job. They've done five dedicated consultations that look at sort of the generational diversity as well as ensuring that they speak to artists who are in the Indigenous community. In addition to that, there is a dedicated website which is part of our digital consultation process. So yegculturemap.ca. And in that website, there are a couple of ways that people can contribute. So there is a section in the website that allows individuals to go in and use a lobstick, which is a wayfinding tool that Indigenous people have used for many, many, many centuries. And the way it works is that people can go and place a lobstick on the map of Edmonton based on their most memorable experiences in arts and heritage. And we think that this not only will give us a sense of where art and heritage is happening in the city, but it becomes a legacy piece for the city of Edmonton and the people of Edmonton. We also have a community within that sort of digital portal where, you know, called abatement are moderating a discussion with those people who are interested in giving their emails and their names. We are sending questions to them. I think it's one question a week. And this form of engagement allows people to be reflective and go a little bit deeper into how they think arts and heritage can make a difference to people's lives. And they can give us their ideas that way. So it's fairly extensive. And we hope that by doing it this way, that we get the real voices of Edmontonians in all their diversity.
Well, I was at the public consultation for the theater community, and there were some really interesting discussions happening around sort of the intersection of arts and heritage. So the art sector is fairly self-explanatory, I think, to people, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about what the heritage side of things encompasses.
You know, I often think of the heritage sector as not one community, but as many communities. And I often think of it as a place where there's a field of activity which encompasses professional heritage practitioners. But more importantly, it also encompasses people who have come to this place and who have tried to keep their own traditions and their own cultures alive. On the other hand, we also have people who have lived in Edmonton for a while and who have seen the city shift and change in terms of its built heritage. And then finally, we have also that idea of heritage, which actually allows us to think about preservation and animation of the past through the field of museology. And so there is this kind of interplay, which is quite interesting. And your observation about how heritage is interwoven into people's lives, it's a very good way of thinking of it, because artists are often people who find inspiration and find something that, you know, compels them to create something. And often that thing is an experience, or maybe a place, maybe it's an object, people's stories, our collective memory of how we see things in a museum. Those are some of the things that I think artists use in their everyday practice. And I'm not surprised, to be honest with you, that heritage often is a source of inspiration to how artists make their work.
For example, Edmonton has some very interesting artist residency programs, including Leanne Olson, who is the artist in residence at the Edmonton Waste Management Center, and also Candice Makawachuk, who's the artist in residence for the cemetery department. So how can artists in these sorts of residencies or who are intersecting with the heritage sector influence things like city planning, things of that nature?
So you're absolutely right that the artist residency program that came out of the last plan has been really successful. I think what is really interesting, and these are very preliminary, extremely preliminary thoughts, is that my personal observation has been that people who have come for these facilitated sessions have often talked about how this plan should be more deeply connected with how we think about our city. And so while we're building this plan for the city of Edmonton over for the next 10 years, the city of Edmonton is also embarking on Vision 2050, which is the next 30 years of Edmonton, of what Edmonton's going to be. And part of that work is to think about a strategy over the next 10 years. How are we going to do that? I think we have heard it loud and clear that unless arts and heritage are woven into urban planning and city building and plans that look at livability and quality of life and vibrancy and healthy communities and social cohesion and intercultural understanding, unless we think about those things in a holistic way, we're never going to hit it. We're never going to achieve it. And the arts and heritage sectors are actually sectors that come out of this discourse anyway. Artists are very used to taking a lead in giving people a glimpse into something that they can't see today. They're often looking at things that are in the future. And I think that is what planning is all about anyway. We have to anticipate. So for me, this plan really is not up for people like me. It's for people who will be in their 30s and 40s in 2029. That kind of vision and that kind of ability to cast into the future is really how I see this plan, you know, in terms of intertwining itself and weaving itself into other city planning documents to advance some really cherished goals for the city of Edmonton that are going to become part of Vision 2050.
And there's probably a lot of even practical overlay. I'm thinking particularly when it comes to venue space and heritage buildings, perhaps. There's a lot of ways that the two sectors definitely meet. So if people want to get involved in the consultation process, can they still do that and how?
We will be ending our in-person consultations. Most of them have been done, as I just said. But the website, yakculturemap.ca, will remain open. And people can contribute to that website, one, by actually giving us your arts and heritage memories and then using the lopstick to place them on a map of Edmonton and giving us the rich stories associated with those memories. But then the other way is to actually give us your email and your name, and then you can be added to the list of people who will then be engaged by Calder Bateman with a question a week. And this is another way to actually give your opinion and get connected to other people in the city who you may not know, but who are all interested and passionate and driven because they want arts and culture to thrive in our city. And so that website piece, the digital consultation piece, I think is a really good way to continue to contribute.
Is there anything else that you'd like to chat about that maybe we haven't touched upon yet?
The only other thing I think that I would like to mention is that this plan is really coming at a time when not only are we changing as a city, but it's also coming at a time when Edmonton is about to cross the million mark and we will become a city of potentially 1.5 to 1.6 million people. We are entering the big leagues. We need a really solid map that will allow us to think about who we are as a people in terms of our identity as a city. And we need that map because it'll allow us to actually project what we want to become as a city that values creativity, that city that values sort of vibrancy of neighborhoods, a city that actually has the possibility for people to come here and make their lives here and enjoy a very high quality of life. And finally, as a city that values its own diversity and is aware of what that brings to our everyday life. I think, you know, this is the perfect opportunity for Edmonton to define itself not only to its own self, but also define itself as a leading, progressive, open-minded place that is actually setting the tone for the rest of the country.
Thank you so much to Sanjay Shahani for sharing his time with us. If you'd like to share your ideas for the future of Edmonton's arts and heritage sectors, you can visit yegculturemap.ca. We'll have the link up on our site. What's next, Elizabeth?
The Donna Noreen Lowry Award for Women of Excellence was created to help women of all ages pursue studies in fields such as finance, healthcare, and community relations, just to name a few. Lisa spoke with Helen Ma to find out what receiving this award has meant for her.
Hi, Helen. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm 18 years old now. I'm going to the University of Alberta in the Faculty of Science. One of my aspirations was to do genetic counseling because I myself have a genetic condition. So genetic counseling is kind of like a new field or career where it's a mixture of like biology and psychology training to help people or families who deal with genetic conditions or who have like a likelihood of having children with genetic conditions, providing them with like information and counseling and stuff like that.
Sounds really interesting. How did you find out about it?
It was actually in the spring of grade 11. I was looking at the WISEST program, and it's for women interested in STEM. And so I was going to apply. And at that time, what I was thinking for my career was like psychologist or like a book editor. So I was looking into different careers and I stumbled upon this one and I found it like really interesting.
When you envision yourself in that role, like what do you see? What do you hope for?
Well, I just hope for the ability to help other people and other families. Like I know right now I'm doing well, but in the beginning it was obviously like hard for my parents. It was a bit of a shock, but I really hope to be able to help these families and these people and to show them that like a genetic condition isn't really the end of the world or anything like that.
What did getting the award mean to you?
Well, it meant a lot on like a lot of different levels. First of all, it's obviously like a lot of money, but it also means like people who are supporting me and who believe in me and like my potential. And I think it's just overall a great award because it's like helping women in these fields that are typically more male-dominated.
Is there anything else that you might want listeners to know?
When I applied, I was anticipating to go into genetic counseling, and now I'm looking at both genetic counseling and possibly law in the future. life changes, I'm just looking to do something in the future that will help people and impact their lives the way that this scholarship has impacted my life.
Many thanks to Helen Ma for telling us what the Lowry Award is helping her to achieve. This isn't the first time we've talked about the award on our show. You might remember hearing from Maria Almond back in episode 8.
Well, Maria recently wrote to us, and here's what she had to say. I just want to give an update. I'm finally graduating this May and will be receiving a degree in accounting and a diploma in finance. Thanks to all the people who made it possible for me. Thank you to the entire team of Edmonton Community Foundation for being instrumental in my success, especially to the Don and Noreen Lowry Women of Excellence Awards panel for choosing me as a recipient of their generosity for 2 years in a row. I've also found a job where I can get started with my CPA training and will start the week after my graduation. Again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything. I hope to one day be able to repay the kindness by paying it forward and impact somebody else's life in the way the Edmonton Community Foundation has impacted mine.
Thanks for the update, Maria. It's great to hear that you're doing so well. Hey, listeners, if you or someone you know might be eligible for this award, be sure to visit ecfoundation.org. The deadline to apply is May 31st.
Here at Edmonton Community Foundation, we get to work with some awesome donors who create funds that help support a wide variety of charities throughout Edmonton. Today, we'd like to introduce you to Chris Quinn, Chief Financial Officer here at ECF. Welcome, Chris. Can you tell us why you started the Quinn Family Fund?
Well, being here every day, it's hard not to get swept up in all the good that we do and want to be a part of it. So that was big for us. The fund was started by my wife and I, and we're hoping we can pass it on to our daughter, Sophie. Unfortunately, we've all been affected by cancer, like most people. My mom's had cancer twice, my dad, and unfortunately we lost my wife's mom to a brain tumor. So we wanted to do something that could support cancer research. And just to make it a bit more fun, we had a bit of a kickoff event, and I grew up my hair long enough to donate it for a kid's cancer wig. And so we had a bit of a whiskey tasting and hair shopping at the same night just to kickstart the fund, and it was a great event. I'm hoping that in a short while this fund is no longer needed to support cancer research and that it can go on to do some other good in the community.
Thanks, Chris, for telling us about your fund. For anyone who's curious, you can check out some sweet glam shots of Chris with his long hair on his fund page. We'll have the link on our site, along with a link to how you can create a fund of your own.
Every episode, we like to give a shout-out to one of the excellent podcasts from the Alberta Podcast Network. And this time, I'm going to put my co-host on the hot seat, because he produces the award-winning I Don't Get It. Hosts Fonda Mithrush and Paul Blinov talk about the latest performances on Edmonton's art scene. Andrew, what inspired this podcast?
Well, full disclosure, I Don't Get It is a podcast that I produce, and it started back in 2013 as a way to address the growing media void in arts coverage in Edmonton. So the hosts are Fonda Mithrush and Paul Blinov. Paul used to be the arts editor of View Weekly, and Fonda has been a dance writer in town for more than a decade. We began the podcast in 2013 in a blanket fort in my living room. Every Sunday or so, we would get together and just have critical discussions about the shows that we saw around town as a way to inform the audience about what they could expect from theater and dance and everything in between. So every week, you can tune in to hear Fonda and Paul chat about all of the most recent shows that they've seen. So tune into that and join the conversation because we also love to hear what other people think of the shows that they've seen around town.
And where can we find it?
You can find it at idontgetityag.com, and you can also find it on the CKUA radio app where you can subscribe to all of the amazing shows on the Alberta Podcast Network.
Thanks, Andrew. We'll have that link on our website.
All right. We're nearing the end of our show, which means...
news time.
Yep. ECF is coming up to its annual meeting on June 7th, so we hope you'll join us for a lovely little lunch at the Wesson Hotel from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. This year, we're featuring keynote speaker Brian McKeever.
Brian McKeever is the most decorated Paralympic cross-country skier in Canadian history, holding 18 medals, including 14 gold. He is passionate about skiing and is not easily held back from doing what he loves. If you'd like to attend our annual meeting, you can RSVP by emailing annualmeeting@ecfoundation.org or calling 780-702-7628.
And Brian will also join us for a special interview for this podcast, so be sure to tune in to our June episode. All right, let's get into our granting deadlines. Remember to keep your ears out to see if you or anyone you know are eligible to apply for some dollars.
We have just three grant deadlines to share with you. The first is the Nancy Farrelly Scholarship. It's an award of $3,000 for students enrolled in a full international baccalaureate program in their final year of high school. The due date is May 31st.
And of course, don't forget the Don and Noreen Lowry Award for Women in Excellence. This is also due on May 31st, and we spoke a bit about this one just a few moments ago.
And lastly, we have some ECF awards and bursaries. These range from $1,000 to $4,000. These awards are for students with financial need who have a history of community involvement or leadership. Applications are due by June 15th.
Be sure to visit our website for more details about each of these grants. We'll be sure to have the links on thewellendowedpodcast.com.
And that brings us to the end of the May edition of the Well Endowed Podcast. Thanks to each of our guests for sharing their stories with us.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it and hope you enjoyed the show.
If you did, be sure to share this episode with your friends and subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play. We've been your hosts, Elizabeth Bonkink
and Andrew Paul. Until next time.
The Well Endowed Podcast is produced by Edmonton Community Foundation
and is an affiliate member of the Alberta Podcast Network.
The show is edited by Lisa Pruden.
You can visit our website at thewellendowedpodcast.com.
Subscribe to us on iTunes.
And follow us on Twitter at @TheECF.
Our theme music is by Octavo Productions.
And as always, don't forget to visit Edmonton Community Foundation at ecfoundation.org.
Well Endowed.